From the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs, this is the Locked On Chiefs podcast.
Welcome back. It's Locked On Chiefs, and it's Red Monday, I guess, is the way we'll put that. Chiefs play the Broncos tonight, or if you're listening to this really early and you're one of the first subscribers, you're hearing it Sunday night as Sunday Night Football is kicking off. So welcome to the show. We have everybody here that you need to hear from before the Chiefs go to play the Denver Broncos. Matt Derrick's with us. Chris is here. I'm here. Seth's doing whatever Seth's doing. We'll deal with him later. But Matt, how are you?
Not bad. How are you guys doing today?
I'm doing well. A little bit of breaking news this weekend over Eric Berry and a safety that everybody seems to want to trade for, fan-wise at least, in Earl Thomas.
Yeah, I mean, Thomas is going to be a story for a while. I mean, it certainly looks like the Seahawks are open to moving him. But, you know, like we've talked about before, you know, they know they can get compensation for Thomas, you know, through the draft pick compensation. So that's the bare minimum that they're going to want back. And when you talk about, you know, hey, you're getting a guy for value and everything like that, I understand the Seahawks trying to hold out for as much as they possibly can. You know, there's a couple of competing reports out there. One that they are at least sticking for a second round pick at bare minimum. Another report that they want 2 seconds, which I think is pretty costly, unless it's something that you know that you can get a deal done with him and everything like that. But there's going to be a big cost for trying to acquire Thomas, and then you've got the consideration about, you know, whether it's something that you can make a decision on a contract for a long term basis. So there's a lot of moving parts to this. Absolutely, I mean, a lot of long term considerations and just how much you're willing to give up. I mean, a deal can be done, but it's just at what cost and, you know, whether it's a short-term or a long-term deal.
Well, and Adam Schefter reported this morning that they were looking for a second-round pick. Ian Rappaport reported that they're looking for 2 second-round picks. I personally think you could maybe do it for the first second-round pick, but it's 2 second-round picks to me is prohibitive. I don't think that's a fair cost for the player, especially considering there is no guarantee you can get him on a long-term deal.
True. I will tell you this, though. I think that the reality of the situation comes down somewhere in between. And if it comes out to a second and a fourth is the cost to truly get that deal done, I think that that's something the Chiefs can live with. And probably the Cowboys can as well. So I still don't know that it gets done. But I will say this. Ron Parker stood up at Earl Thomas's wedding. So I got to hope they have an inside track there a little bit.
Well, and the other thing that I would say is in Kansas City's favor is the fact that they are in the AFC, so it's a team that Seattle is not going to play this year for anything else. Granted, the Cowboys have already played the Seahawks, but it is possible they could also meet in the playoffs, so the Seahawks wouldn't meet Kansas City until possibly the Super Bowl. So I think that that has some part of it as well. Getting them out of the conference is always something that you would rather do than keeping them in conference.
Yeah, all things being equal, yeah, I do think the Seahawks would like to see him go to the AFC versus the NFC. I also think they would be more likely to want him to maybe not go to Dallas, where it looks like the Cowboys might have more of an interest in signing him long term, and you know he's going to be in Dallas for a long time. Whereas in Kansas City, I think there's a question mark whether he's just would just be a rental player or he would be somebody that they would keep long term.
Yeah, I got to say, if they do a second, even if it's just for a second round pick on a rental player, I have a problem with that personally. But
yeah, if you don't think you can get it done, I would agree with you too. That's a tough sell at that cost. But I have to think, like I said, that Earl gives him that personal connection, gives you a better choice, a better option, maybe that he has some kind of personal connection to the Chiefs roster that maybe that gives you a better chance to re-sign him.
Certainly. I mean, I think that's a possibility. You know, the other consideration obviously is that you're talking about buying a player, you know, for a long term who's going to be 30 years old and buying his, you know, 30 through probably 33 year seasons at least. Mm-hmm. And that's another risk. And it's not something that, you know, Andy Reid and his history, we don't know that much about Brett Veach yet, but that's not been something that they normally have done in the past. And I think that we can probably see on a couple of deals that they've done where they have bought those free agent years into the 30s, it's not been a great move for them.
And that's fair. I think it's a gamble for sure. But if you're thinking right now, that there is this 2-year window maybe right now to make a Super Bowl, and you think you can get Barry back, maybe it's something they do. I still think it's a long shot, but we'll see. But Barry's the next thing we have to talk about because, Matt, you got some new information, and he has a diagnosis. Is that confirmed?
As confirmed as we can get it at this point. You know, the NFL Network report from Mike Garofalo was that he has a Haglund's deformity. This had been kind of speculated about that this might be what the issue was, with them talking about the sore heel. And remember, this sore heel is nothing new. I mean, this is the same heel that was sore last year during training camp, before he tore the Achilles in the other foot. So, this isn't something new. I mean, this is what has been plaguing him for a long time. So the fact that it could be that the Haglund's deformity, which is this bony enlargement in the foot that, you know, rubs up against the Achilles and the bursa sac there causes inflammation, is very painful. And that's been what the real issue is and everything like that is trying to manage that pain. There's a lot of different ways this could go. I mean, this is not something that typically just goes away. I mean, you can manage the pain, but it's only going to go away with surgery. And the fact that he hasn't practiced now since August 11th, and he's been having this issue now for over a year, it certainly lends credence to the speculation that this is something that the pain management isn't working necessarily. So there's a lot of different ways that this could go. I mean, we do seem like we know a little bit more about what the situation is, but what we don't know yet is what the consequences are. You know, if it is just a matter that, you know, that the Chiefs think that they can get the pain management underway and get something done, or if it is going to require surgery eventually. But I go back to beginning of this season when we heard from Coach Reed and from Rick Burkholder, who's the head athletic trainer for the team. And while they were talking about the fact that he was literally days, you know, literally day to day, you know, there was the suggestion that, you know, a lot of this is on Eric Berry as far as when he feels comfortable to return. And if that heel is just continuing to be painful, that does suggest why maybe he has been reluctant and why he hasn't been ready to come back to the field yet.
And I can't blame him. I mean, those symptoms are giving you alerts to what's going on. There's another report out there. Dr. David Chow said that he understood that Barry's already had some kind of preemptive surgery done. And that makes sense because, as I understand it, Haglund's deformity is a calcification, a bone spur, it's called in common terms. But anytime you get a bone spur, it's never all by itself. You can get kind of a roughed surface. You can get calcifications that are fairly minute in terms of their overall size, but they grate on that tendon in particular, and that can then wear down the tendon and cause a rupture itself. So it sounds like, if that report is correct, that they've already tried to do something proactive to treat it. And if that hasn't worked, then I think the prognosis gets worse from there.
Yeah, it certainly brings in, you know, the fact that this could be a long-term thing, and it could be simply that it's something that Barry's going to have to play through. If they have tried to do something with it to mitigate the pain and everything, and that hasn't worked, eventually he may just have to make the decision about whether he wants to play through the pain.
Well, I have to ask the question if this is something that they already knew about and something that they think he's going to have to either play through or whatever they think he's going to have to do, why not try to have off-season surgery and get it fixed? Because I understand that that's a very painful surgery, but this is keeping him off the field, and this is something that's going to keep him from playing because there's no way to really heal this. It's a deformity. It's not a issue of whether or not he can try to play through it, it sounds like, to me at least.
Well, that's another one of the unknowns. I mean, because the Chiefs and Barry have played so close to the vest, we don't really know what they have done. The team hasn't certainly told us that they've done anything intervention-wise, you know, as far as surgery goes or anything, if they've even on a minor basis to try and, you know, reduce that enlargement and everything. But we don't know. I mean, it could be that they have done something, like Dr. Chow has said, that they have tried to do something surgically to mitigate it a little bit. Maybe there's something more drastic there, and there are cases that when you go in to reduce the size of that enlargement, that you do have to repair the Achilles, and that could be an even more long term. But the fact that the Chiefs did not put him on IR, anything like that, they didn't try to make a move that direction, it certainly lends to the credence that the Chiefs did not expect this thing to be dragging out long term, and they thought that, he would definitely be out on the field at some point. I would say at least in the first half of the season, but certainly you would think in the first month or so.
Well, let me ask the question on this, Matt. Do you think that them continuing to win has any bearing on whether or not Barry plays anytime soon?
I think it has a small bearing, at least in the sense that if they continue winning, they don't feel like they need to rush him back. Now, if they were losing and the defense was a big part of that, then yeah, I mean, I think there would probably be pressure to bring him back quicker than later. But the fact that they are winning, at this point, they haven't needed him. So, you know, I could see that if that's their strategy is to say, let's just see when we need to bring him back, and that their idea is that we're going to have him. Because they have taken this approach before in the past with some players, which is let's rest them as long as we can and try and get their best play later in the season and for the playoff run.
Well, I will say I would disagree with the fact that they haven't needed him, but I understand what you were trying to say.
3-0. I mean, they've done it without him, so.
Yeah, but their defense looks horrible. But that's neither here nor there. Let's go ahead and take a quick break, and we'll be right back to talk about this game on Monday night. You know, ever since we started this podcast, people have been asking us for advice. Usually it's what team to bet on this week. The truth is, we don't know who's going to win, but if you think you know, you got to check out MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why we always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust us, guys. They're your best bet this season. They've been in business for years, have great reviews online, and their mobile site is very easy to use. Go lay down some cash and win big today. We would only recommend a service to our listeners that's been good to us. That's why we're urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use promo code LOCKEDON25 to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON25 when creating your account to claim the bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. And MyBookie will match the listener's first deposit 100% up to $1,000. All right, gentlemen, where do you want to go? Offense, defense?
I'd like to start with the defense.
Of course you would.
I think this is a game. Well, yeah, come on. We talk so much. Honestly, between you and me, I'm getting a little to the point where I'm running out of kind things to say about Pat Mahomes that don't sound like I like live next door to him or something. So I'm going to go with the defensive side because I think this is a chance. This is an offense in Denver that has a couple of things they need to be worried about, but also gives them a chance to recover. As much as we thought they played better against the Niners, I think they have a chance to play even better against these Broncos if they do what they do best and players are allowed to do what they're good at. And outside of the couple of matchups we should talk about that they should be worried about, in particular, I thought Justin Houston finished the last game well, and I think he's got a great matchup going in here. Matt, what do you see about him and D Ford as well?
Well, I think there's definitely an opportunity there. You know, this the Denver offense hasn't set the world on fire. They run the ball extremely well. That's what you've got to guard against. And that's certainly, you know, Justin Houston's a big part of that. But, you know, Anthony Hitchens and Reggie Ragland, to me, are going to be the real X factors here. Being able to stop that run game. Because if you can stop the run game and you can force this team to be more one-dimensional, this isn't like, you know, some of the other teams that they faced this year. This is a passing offense that has struggled, and Case Keenum has struggled. So you can get pressure on them. You can get to Case Keenum. You can get them to turn the ball over. But to me, a lot of it starts with that run. I mean, if you can limit the run and you can force the Broncos, and part of that too is offensively. I mean, if you can get the Broncos down and force them to be even more one dimensional, this is a pass offense that you can beat, and that Houston and Ford, they can have good games. I mean, Ford's an X factor with the injury, just how healthy he will be. But you know, obviously Justin Houston had some pretty good games against the Broncos in his past.
Now, you bring up Ford, and this is interesting to me because I never even expected him to be available for this game. But correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't this really kind of play into Kansas City's hands with the way that they're able to defend the run versus the pass? I mean, to me, if you're Kansas City, you want to have a team that's going to try to run the ball on you because at that point, yeah, they might slow down the game a little bit, but you're better at stopping the run than you are at stopping the pass. And I don't think personally, at least with the way Keenan has played so far, that Keenan can beat this team.
I'm with you. I mean, I think if this turns into an offensive battle and it's up to Case Keenum to beat the Chiefs, I think that's where you want it as Kansas City. I mean, I think that's where you want it to be. Obviously, the Broncos are going to try and slow that down. I mean, they're going to try and use what experience they have against Mahomes to keep the offense from getting this game getting out of control. But I think it's a real test for this rebuilt Chiefs run defense, because I do think that they have played pretty well most of the season. Play pretty well against the Steelers, who have a good run offense. It's not Le'Veon Bell, but James Conner still had some pretty good games, and they shut him down. Now, how much of the Chiefs?
Matt Breida was the leading rusher in the NFL when he came to town.
Exactly, and now how much of the Chiefs' success against the run has been that they have forced teams out of the run by just burying them so early? That's a real question.
No, it is.
So I think there are still some question marks, but I do think that what we've seen so far is that with Xavier Williams, I think even with Derek Nnadi too, I'll include him as well, Hitchens and Ragland, I think that's been a pretty tough run defense so far.
I have to agree. And just a quick side note, it bodes well for the future, in my opinion, because Brett Veach accomplished what he set out to accomplish. He wanted this run defense to be better. You can complain about Breland Speaks and his pass rush ability or where they spent draft picks, but he wanted this run defense to be better, and they could deal with pass rush next year. And if that's their goal next year, I expect that to improve as well.
Yeah, they definitely have added, done what they wanted to do with adding toughness to this defense. And I still say, hey, with Breland Speaks, it's way too early. He's still playing more than they've had some other players in that position in the past. I get that he hasn't looked fantastic early, but to me, way too early. I mean, I still think there's obviously potential there. They like what he brings to the team. They like what his skill set is. It's a matter of trying to bring it out. And he is making a transition. I mean, it's a different position that he's played in the past. So there's a lot that goes into it, but we will see. Time will tell, certainly. But I think that all along the Chiefs really were hoping that, Speak was the kind of guy that could make an impact as the season went on rather than right out of the box. So let's see what happens. But, right now, with the way that Houston and Ford have been playing, they haven't really needed Speaks and even, Tano Passanio to step up too much in that position.
Well, and I'll tell you this. We say this when you're talking about musicians playing together. One performance is as good as a week of rehearsal. And I feel like that's how the attitude they're taking with Speaks as well. Get him on the field, even if it's for limited reps or more than they think that he should have, in order to get him prepared quickly this season for next season.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. I mean, it really is, because you're right. I mean, they were only going to need him as a starter this year in the event of an injury, but it's all about trying to build him up and to get him to be a player next year.
Well, and along those lines, you look at what Tano Passanio looked like last year and what he looks like this year. I think it's a completely different player, and I understand players progress at different speeds, but to me, Speaks was more of a ready player than Passanio was, and if this team can get Passanio to look like what he has in the preseason and so far when he's played, I think that bodes well for what they can do for Speaks.
Well, especially when you consider that, the Chiefs view those two players as fairly equal right now. And yet Passanio has a, full year of development on Speaks. So, yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, they think that year of development is going to be critical to him. And like I said, I mean, they were not necessarily expecting him to be an immediate contributor. They thought they wanted him to be able to be somebody who could spell them off the bench. But they understood, that it was not going to be an immediate thing, that he needed some time to adjust to the position and to the speed.
And I think what they have in being able to use him against these Broncos is setting the edge, definitely, because I think probably the weapon that I think is probably the scariest thing for them is this Lindsey kid, who can run between the tackles, but he's a very shifty back. He's a smaller guy. He's got good speed. You let him to the edge, and I think you're in trouble. So I think that's one player that they have to key on.
Yeah, he's averaging like 6 yards a carry. I mean, he's been a really explosive player so far. That is who I think that you do need to key on. Royce Freeman's been, pretty efficient too, especially in short yardage situations. So, that's why they've been able to run the ball so effectively, is they got a couple of guys back there who have different looks that can do some different things. But Lindsey's the guy who can beat you with the home run. You've got to guard against that. And he does have the speed that he can break off the big runs, and you get a couple of those and it can change the ball game.
Well, in speaking of that in particular, that to me makes it even more important that they use Ford in passing situations and try to let Passanio and Speak set the edge or somebody else be there to help set the edge, because that is definitely something that Ford struggles with.
Yeah, and that's why I think you probably will see a little bit more Ford going after the passer and playing in that situation than that, you know, Chiefs fans might see what they don't like, which is Justin Houston, you know, doing that more and everything like that and not going after the quarterback as much just to be able to guard against the run.
When they do have to throw the ball, I think the Chiefs are in a unique situation for them over the last few years in that their best wide receiver cover option in Fuller is going to be on their best receiver in Sanders, who is playing a lot more in the slot than he has in years past because of the addition of Courtland Sutton. But it's Sutton and Thomas that I think scare me the most in that if they do get in the red zone, those are two big bodies that can go up against the Chiefs' smaller corners in Skandrick and Nelson. I think that's an advantage that they have to be very, very wary of, and it falls again on the safeties to provide deep help.
Yeah, and you know, I'll tell you what, I mean, I even go back to just the acquisition of Fuller, and I say that this team, this game is probably one of the biggest factors in why you go out and get a Kendall Fuller, because you've got, you know, receivers like Emmanuel Sanders, especially in the AFC West, who have beaten the Chiefs so badly out of the slot. And, and I mean, we talk about Mitchell Schwartz being a guy that you went out and got because you needed somebody to stop Von Miller. You go out to get a Kendall Fuller because you need to stop Emmanuel Sanders. When he has played against the Chiefs, he's absolutely, you know, roasted them the last few years. So to me, that's the biggest matchup, and that alone will speak volumes about Kendall Fuller. If Fuller has a big game, I mean, this is why you got him, is for this game right here.
But let me ask you this: isn't that a reason why they wouldn't play Thomas in the Sanders in the slot? I mean, if you know that you're going to have Fuller in the slot guarding him, you can move him away. I'm not saying that it's not something that they're looking at, but I do think that Nelson and Skander could play better than I expected. Both of them would, for that matter, this season so far. And I really think that the bigger issue is the back end with the safeties and linebackers covering the running backs coming out of the backfield. And thankfully, Denver doesn't have a tight end that really scares me, which is something that's teams have been able to use against Kansas City in the past couple of weeks.
You know, I mean, it's one of those decision costs that and decisions that coaches have to make, which is, you know, Sanders is your best slot receiver. So if you're moving him, and these guys are going to move around, absolutely. I mean, they try and create matchups on every play. But if you end up moving Sanders out of the slot and putting somebody else in there, you're definitely making yourself weaker in the slot. I still expect to see Sanders in the slot quite a bit. And even if he's on the outside, not any guarantees necessarily that they won't have Fuller playing over there too. The Chiefs haven't done very much of any switching. I mean, as far as when Skandrick has been in there, you know, he's been outside and Fuller has been inside, but there's nothing that's going to prevent them from, you know, having Fuller play some more outside too, if they feel like they need to guard against Sanders.
Well, I think that's really going to be what it comes down to. So at this point, folks, thanks for hanging in with us. I know you've been waiting. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, after I tell you that you should be checking out the rest of the Locked On Network, and especially Matt Williamson's show because of his new lineup. But when we come back after this break, we're going to talk about your boy Pat and what the offense is going to do.
Are you looking to go check out a Chiefs game next weekend against the Jacksonville Jaguars? You need to go check out Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats is an online ticket marketplace dedicated to providing fans of live entertainment with experiences that can last a lifetime. With Vivid Seats, listeners can watch their favorite teams and artists perform in person. Vivid Seats helps fans find their seats to any of their favorite live events, including sports, concerts, theater, and more. They offer great prices and an easy purchasing experience. With the podcast code Locked On, listeners can receive $20 off orders of $200 or more if they are a first-time customer of Vivid Seats. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app and enter promo code Locked On to receive $20 off orders of $200 or more as a new customer of Vivid Seats. All Vivid Seats confirmed orders are backed by 100% money-back guarantee.
So your boy, my boy, America's boy. Oh, wait, that's Sherman. Sorry.
I think we do need to mention our buddy Pete Schrager had a Josh Norman on the NFL live show this morning on Fox, and Josh Norman says everybody needs to slow down on anointing Patrick Mahomes.
Josh Norman needs to play him then. That's all I got to say about that. But
fair enough.
You know, you haven't been on the field with him. I don't want to hear it.
Well, and that's why, to me, this game is so fascinating, because this is the first defense that that Patrick Mahomes has faced. He's going to be facing the second time. So there's not going to be any surprises. They're not going to be surprised at his arm strength. They're not going to be surprised at his footwork and being able to get out of the pocket and extend plays. They're not going to be surprised at their field vision, because they saw all of that last year. Now, you know, they didn't see this offense in the same form. It's a little bit different, and the Broncos recognize that. I mean, they really do. I mean, I was really interested in some of the things that they had to say this week, especially Von Miller talking about this offense and how much he thinks that it goes through Sammy Watkins rather than some of the other guys. But they've seen this offense. I mean, they know what it is. I mean, they know the nuts and bolts of it. And even though there's some new wrinkles this year and some differences, to me, this is the next big test for Mahomes, is to see what happens when a pretty good defense that's seen him before has a chance to make some adjustments and to see what they do against him.
Well, and I agree with that. But what I will say is this defense has seen Mahomes, but they haven't seen Mahomes with the weapons that he's going to have. It's a much different story going against Mahomes when he has Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins, Travis Kelce, Kareem Hunt, all available to him, compared to what he had last year in J.U. Chesson, DeMarcus Robinson, and Albert Wilson, and Hunt for maybe a quarter. But what I also will say is that the bigger thing to me isn't necessarily that they've seen him twice. It's who they're missing from last year that saw him last year. They're not having Aqib Talib is a huge deal to their defense.
Yeah, I mean, they are struggling in the secondary, particularly in 3 and 4 corner situations. Those guys have not played well. I mean, they've been even calling them out this week. Some of their own teammates, the coaches have been challenging them because Chris Harris is a pretty good player and Brad Roby is a pretty good player. But when they have been having to go into nickel dime situations, they've been beaten. And that's where, you know, you have to play the Chiefs in a lot of nickel and dime looks, because they've got the ability to put those playmakers out there. There's going to be plays to be made out there against this Broncos secondary.
Exactly. And thank you for saying that, because that's the biggest thing to me about this whole thing, is that you're looking at a team that struggles being in the nickel. And that's what Kansas City is going to use and try to use to their advantage. I expect that Demetrius Harris is going to get less snaps than he did last week, because going to a 2 tight end set doesn't necessarily help them against this Broncos defense that it would in a more normal situation where they're not struggling near as much in the back end of their secondary.
Yeah, I certainly would not be surprised to see the Chiefs, even with the pass rushers that the Broncos have, I wouldn't be surprised the Chiefs to continue to go into those empty formations and a lot of, you know, 4 receiver looks and everything like that, because there are plays out there to be made against that Broncos secondary, even though you have to deal with the Bronco pass rush.
Ryan, do you not agree?
I completely agree, and I'll tell you this too. They also have a safety situation that is much like the Chiefs. Justin Simmons has given up more receptions on more targets than even Eric Murray has. Given up 2 touchdowns, almost nearly the same amount of yards, and it's very eerily similar to what we're dealing with, a young guy having to step into that starting role. And when you look at what quarterbacks have been able to do against this defense, they've been able to get deep on him. And it just plays exactly into what Pat Mahomes wants to do. And like you said, it may not be all the time first look, but there will be times Tyreek or Sammy will get past their deep safety, and it will be a home run waiting to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's definitely out there. I mean, but that's why, you know, the Broncos rely so much on that pass rush. And if you can slow down their pass rush in any way whatsoever, there are definitely plays to be made out there against that secondary. And that's why I'm really intrigued to see how the Broncos do play it, because, you know, we haven't seen anybody slow down Patrick Mahomes yet. I know that somebody's going to stumble on it. They're going to figure out what the formula is. And a team that's seen him before is, to me, the most likely to figure it out.
What I will say, though, when you look at this game that's coming up on Sunday or on Monday night, you look at what they've seen, you look at what Patrick Mahomes has seen, and you look at what he's done so far in his career. His first 4 games, his first game against Denver, he came out – and I thought he looked like he was a little off early in the game. He had a fantastic throw to Demetrius Harris to get a first down. But other than that, I thought he looked like he was a little off. He comes out Sunday in against the 49ers, and I think he still looked a little off. I do think he was amped. This game, he's not going to be near as amped as he was, I don't think, as he was the first time he faced off against Denver or against the 49ers, just because he's been there before. It's not a new situation for him anymore, so I think it's going to help. And it's going to be a fun game for Chiefs fans because I expect them to bring out the track stars and run all up and down the field on Denver.
I mean, if Mahomes struggles in this game, I know that, that people are going to say, hey, it's the first time in the bright lights and it's the first time in prime time and everything, and be that as an excuse. But I don't think that's going to be a factor at all. I don't think that's going to be an issue. I mean, this kid so far has had just an incredible composure. Was incredibly relaxed in the locker room on Saturday. I mean, he was talking about Texas Tech and the Texas Tech game and saying, oh, don't worry, we're a second-half team, we'll come back. And then he went out to, you know, go over to shoot some baskets with the guys. So, you know, this he's remarkably composed, you know, on and off the field. So even though he gets excited, I mean, he's an emotional guy. I mean, he does get amped. But he never seems to sweat it. I mean, he's composed. So, I mean, like I said, if he struggles, I think it's going to be because the Broncos are playing good defense. I don't think it's going to be good because of the bright lights in the crowd.
It gives them a chance to do something that they did last year, but it's even better knowing that you've replaced your signal caller. Going an opportunity to go 4-0, have two wins against divisional rivals. This is really what we're going to find out about this team is whether they're able to perform when they have to perform.
Well, as you look at what this game means, you know, having two wins against division rivals is going to be huge. But even more so than that, having the ability to go basically before this game even starts, having to basically be up two games in the division if you win against the Broncos after only four games.
Well, I'm going to be the devil's advocate here. I'm going to have people trashing me and everything, but 5-0 last year was the exact same situation. You had a lead in the division. You had a game up on the Patriots. You had a couple in the division. It was the exact same spot. So to me, the start is great and everything, but it's the middle of the schedule. I mean, you can't have another letdown like you did last year. And I'll be honest, I think this team is primed to not have that. I see a difference in this team. I really do. I mean, last year, I thought this was a pretty confident 5-0 team. I mean, I think that they thought they were Super Bowl champs. They really acted like that. I mean, it was a group that I did not think that they saw the punch coming, and when the punch came, they didn't respond to it real well. This group is different. I mean, it really is. I mean, I think they're confident in a way, but you are still hearing, you know, everything from defense and offense and everything like this. I mean, they seem frustrated each week about plays that they left out on the field. And they have made just enough mistakes and have just enough problems that they're able to come out of each game, you know, with being able to say that. I mean, the offense came out of that San Francisco game and say, we scored 3 points in the second half. It's unacceptable. I mean, you got to be able to put that game away. You got to be able to do that. You know, the defense coming out of the game and saying, hey, we had some really good plays. I mean, we came out in the first half, played really tough, but second half, we didn't do it. So, you know, even though they're 3-0, to get the 4-0, they still have a chip on their shoulder, which this team last year, I didn't feel like they had. I don't think that team had that chip. And this team does. I mean, this team still seems to feel like that even though they're undefeated, that they've got some work to do. And this is, you get through the toughest part of this schedule. The middle part of that schedule is where you can get some things done. And to me, that's where it's going to be decided. I mean, if they can keep this thing going, I mean, if you get to 4-0 and you keep this thing rolling, it can go a long way. But you've got to be able to stick with it. I mean, last year they were in the exact same spot and they let it get away from them. This group, I got a different feeling about it. I'll be honest. I got a different feeling about this team.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up because if they do have an opportunity, well, they do have an opportunity to make big things happen if they can get past this game with a win and get to 4-0. But I think even bigger, you look at who they have coming in the next couple, 3 weeks. You know, if you get past Denver and get to 4-0, then you come home and play the Jacksonville Jaguars, who are a fantastic team and means a lot when you talk about the AFC playoff seeding. And then you're going to be going to New England, and then you've got Cincinnati. You have a three-week stretch that's not going to be easy, even though Kansas City has played New England very well. I do think that that's going to be a big concern, but I do think that they do get to 4-0 this week.
Well, with that said, let's get to the actual predictions. And I think we'll leave the guest for last, since he's the voice of reason today. Chris, you want to start?
Not really. I never like starting, but I guess I will. I do think Kansas City gets the 4-0 this week. I do think it's going to be a closer score than most would really appreciate. But I don't think it's going to be a close game. I think Kansas City's offense comes out and hits them in the mouth and gets three touchdowns early again like they have and gets out to a fast start. And then they play the defense that they've been playing the past couple of weeks, where they don't necessarily let the team back in the game, but they let them closer than most people would like to see. So I'm expecting that Kansas City is going to score, probably 35 points, maybe 38 points again this week. Although it's hard for me to go and say that they're going to score less than they have in the previous 3 weeks, considering I think that this is a defense that they can take advantage of. So it wouldn't surprise me for them to go over 40. But I do expect Denver to put up 24 at least.
I'm not far off of you. I think actually that Von Miller is going to make a couple of plays that are going to put drives to a stop. And I think Bucker does get a couple of opportunities. I see it 41-27, and the Broncos will get a couple of big plays.
Well, I'm pretty conservative on this one. I feel like the Broncos at home on a Monday night are going to find a way to muddle it up, play a little over their heads, maybe get some stops on defense when they need to. I still think the Chiefs pulled this out. I've got them 27-24. It would not surprise me at all, just the way that this offense is rolling, that if they do get a couple of more scores, maybe gets out of hand late, they do put 40 up. So those my two most likely outcomes to me are a close Chiefs win or a big Chiefs win, which usually means that Denver's going to win this thing in a blowout. But we'll see. Since I don't think that's a possibility, it's almost a guaranteed outcome now.
Well, we would like to know what you think. Hit us at Locked On Chiefs on Twitter and share with us your thoughts. Oh, and a late development, I will be at this game. If you want to meet up, I'll be outside the main entrance there about half an hour before kickoff. So if you are a Chiefs fan, you listen to the show, come find me out there. Guys, appreciate your time. I know it's kind of a long show and it's a weird day to do this, but appreciate it. And I'm looking forward to this game. Thank you for your time, Matt.
Absolutely. Great talking to you guys as always.
And folks, we will have postgame for you in some fashion of some sort. I don't even know what's going to happen now, but we'll have that for you. Thanks for listening now, and we'll talk to you then.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes or Google Play. Follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Chiefs. Check out my work at RGR Football on YouTube, Chris's work on LockedOnChiefs.com, and all of Seth's film analysis at TheAthletic.com. Thanks for listening.